From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with your first summer job. Do you remember what it was? For decades, a majority of American teenagers worked summer jobs, and while it wasn't always as gauzy as the movies portrayed, sometimes it was. I was a YMCA camp counselor and a program director. I never wanted summers to end. And so this headline from Vox last month was rather chilling. The summer job as we know it is over. Journalist and author Rainsford Stauffer chronicles a dramatic shift in summer employment and what that means for teenagers and for workers of all ages. Stauffer points out that many teenagers need to work to make money for themselves or to help their families. But many older Americans are no longer able to retire, so they're going after the same kinds of jobs that young people used to get during the summers. On top of that, the traditional summer job market was already shrinking before the pandemic. Now it's even tighter. Most summer camps closed this year. The popular gigs are largely on hiatus. Stauffer brings some data to back up this argument. Consider this from Pew Research. 20 years ago, half the teens in this country spent their summer working. By 2018, fewer than a third of teens had summer jobs. And how about our pandemic summer? By one measure, it's 23%. There are domino effects that come from fewer teens finding summer work. The very culture of work is changing, and often young people are blamed for circumstances beyond their control. They start their careers later. Then they're told, how come you're not working? Stauffer notes that when we trip over the myth of summer jobs, we ignore important and shifting realities. So let's talk summer jobs. Our guests this hour include the author of that piece. Rainsford Stauffer is a freelance writer and author of the forthcoming book, An Ordinary Age. Rainsford, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Chloe Malloy, a lifeguard for the city of Rochester and a rising junior, I think, at World of Inquiry School, number 58. Is that right, Chloe?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, thanks for being with us. Also with us is Ari Feibusch, who is a rising senior at Brighton. Ari, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
And Z Martin is also a rising senior and working the summer at Duncan. Z, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Rainsford, I want to start with you, and I really feel like your work in various publications is capturing kind of the zeitgeist, and really kind of you're quite a cultural observer, and I'm curious to know what first caught your eye and why you wanted to write about summer jobs in particular.
Absolutely. Well, first, thank you so much for the kind words. I think one of the things that stands out to me is sort of an ongoing misconception about young people is laziness. And we see that in all kinds of different ways. It's how we talk about voting right now. Young people are too lazy to go out and vote. Young people aren't working this summer during the academic year because they simply don't want to work. And I think that overlooks not only how not working is truly not an option for so many young adults who are caretakers or contributing to their family's income or attempting to pay their way through college despite costs continuing to skyrocket, but it also underestimates the fact that our society right now isn't in a position to create opportunities for today's young people. It's not a matter of them just being disengaged or lazy or not wanting to take ownership of their lives. It's that the systems and structures that used to allow that, at least for certain groups of young people, are slowly continuing to diminish in real time.
Rainsford, is there a parallel that you see between the stereotype that young people are lazy and don't want to work and the idea that people who are in poverty just don't want to get a job?
Absolutely. I think that that's a huge part of it. And I think that it also does not help the situation that we really like to apply a certain kind of moral value to what consists of a quote unquote good job. It's why you see quips and comment sections about workers at McDonald's needing to get a real job. That's a job that a teenager has. And we know that's completely despicable. We know we need increased wages for all working people. Everyone should be able to make a living wage. And there's this idea that if you don't work, it's simply because you don't want to. Instead of there being A, real barriers to entering the workforce, especially for young people, or B, assuming that everyone is in the same position, whether that's geographically or with their level of health and ability, that they can just go out and get any job, assuming that that means there are jobs to have in the first place.
Well, you know, Rainsford, certainly there are arguments and there are some, I suspect, some listeners who would argue that a lot of summer jobs are entry-level jobs, that those are jobs that should pay a minimum wage, that don't merit $15 or $17 or $20 an hour, and you know that the argument is that they pay appropriately. What do you say to that?
I think that experts would probably have varying opinions on that. My opinion, just as an individual, is that if a person is working, you know, 40 hours a week, if they're working full time, regardless of their age, they should be able to make a minimum wage to sustain their cost of living, which if we look at data, including for young people, we know those costs of living are rising. Rent is expensive. College costs are out of control. And so the myth that you can kind of work your way through school just by working over the summer certainly might be the case for some young people, depending on where they go, what job they have, where they are. But it's definitely not the case for everyone. And I think we do a disservice to sort of furthering progress in this area when we act like it should be that easy.
We'll post Rainsford's piece on our various platforms if you want to check it out, listeners. And if you want to call the program or email us with your thoughts on summer jobs, stereotypes about young people, teenagers, work, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And the email address is connections@WXXI.org. In a moment, we'll talk to our other guests about their thoughts about whether, you know, work is available if they want it and the value of it and what their experience has been. But Rainsford, I do want to talk a little bit about what we are seeing this summer in particular. And, you know, when I think about the fact that Z's working at Dunkin', Chloe's a lifeguard, these jobs, in my eyes, Rainsford, are essential. I mean, that in a pandemic, we need people who are doing all kinds of work to kind of keep businesses going, to keep opportunities for us to be outdoors and active. I think the definition of essential work has probably broadened, at least temporarily, and I wonder if that will stick long term.
I would imagine so, and I certainly hope so, because I think it goes back to the idea that we like to ascribe value to certain kinds of jobs over others. And I do think it's a little bit depressing that it took a pandemic for us to recognize the value of people working in the service sector. I was looking at some data that is quoted in the piece from Drexel University's Center for Labor Markets and Policy, and had the pandemic not happened, they have a report that explains that seasonally adjusted teen employment rate was expected to be about 31%, which was the highest level since before the Great Recession. And now the teen summer employment rate was expected to be at a historic low, about 23%. So there's no doubt that not only has COVID sort of changed our perception of work and the value we place on certain positions that I hope is eventually reflected in policy, but it's also changed what jobs are available and who gets to have them.
And your piece takes a look at some of the roots of the dearth in summer jobs now. Really goes back to the Great Recession of, what, 07, 08, 09, it looks like to me. Is that right?
I believe so, yes. I think that bears out in the numbers because it led to such a dramatic decrease in the number of teens that were working during the summer, at least according to some research from the Urban Institute.
Well, before we get Chloe and Ari and Z to tell us their thoughts about these subjects, on just that subject that we've been talking about regarding wages, et cetera, Judy in Fairport wants to jump in. First, go ahead, Judy.
I graduated from Nazareth College in 1974. At the time, the tuition was $2,000 a year. A year. I had a summer job. I earned minimum wage. It was $2.20 an hour. That's about, if you were to look at the $40,000 tuition package at Nazareth this year, we should be earning $40 an hour minimum wage if you were to be looking at this proportionately. It's totally impossible for anybody to work their way through college today. I don't care what you do.
You paid $2,000 in 1974, is that right?
Yes, that's verifiable too. That is absolutely what the tuition was back then. A year, not a semester.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Judy Rainsford, you want to jump in with some thoughts on that first?
I think that that's just the maybe the most critical point to make in this conversation. And I think when you double down on looking at the different kinds of labor we expect at least some populations of college students to do, like unpaid internships to bolster their resumes, to get the right kind of job, to pay off all the student loans they've taken to get that certain job, it just has an incredible compounding effect that kind of leaves out the fact that society and our structures and the cost of living, the cost of college, really has substantially changed. And, you know, that doesn't even take into account that there's so many statistics right now on students who are food or housing insecure. They're just trying to pay for their basic necessities, let alone eventually paying off student loans they've taken to go to college in the first place. So I think that's a critical thing to look at, that for a lot of young people, a lot of people in general, college does not seem financially viable anymore.
But why do you think that there is this stereotype that young people just don't want to get jobs, Rainsford?
I think that that stereotype has probably persisted for a long time as generations look back on generations younger than them. I think it's probably the same millennials versus Gen Z thing that we've seen a lot, maybe taking a different form. But I also think that there is a lot of assumption that young people should just know how all of this works now. And what I've heard from a lot of them is that they are trying to do things the way their parents did. Some of the students I talked to for this article in Vox had applied anywhere between 20 to 40 jobs, and they are going out and they're knocking on doors and trying to connect with their neighbors and applying to everything that looks like an opportunity, but it's really hard when the opportunities just aren't falling. And so I think that that can kind of create this effect where young people are entitled, they don't think they should have to do this kind of labor, they don't think they should have to work at all. And statistically, for a lot of young adults, that's just not the case. And in a lot of cases, it's not just working for spending money, it's working because they're trying to support themselves or their families.
Well, let's bring them in. And by the way, to Judy and Fairport's point about graduating from NAS in 1974, if the number $2,000 to go to NAS in 1974, I mean, I don't have that verified. I trust Judy. Today, that would be $11,100. And the cost to go to NAS is four times that. That's not to give NAS a hard time. That's just the reality of what has changed in the last 50 years in this country. And by the way, NAS is a lot less than some other institutions locally. So a lot has changed there. Chloe Malloy, lifeguard for the city of Rochester, rising junior at school number 58 in Rochester. What has summer been like for you with lifeguarding? Can you tell me about what you've been up to?
Sure. So originally, I tried to become a lifeguard in March, and honestly, it was a bit different, you know, the certification and becoming a lifeguard because of the pandemic. We had to do things online through blended learning, and it was definitely a different experience than I think you would originally have had there not been a pandemic. So that's been interesting, and, you know, I've kind of had to double up studying on my skills because I didn't get as much time training in water and things. But other than that, you know, it's a great job. I work with kids, try and help them swim or, you know, pass their deep end tests and give tips. So it's been a great experience, but definitely different.
Yeah. Do most of your friends work during the summer?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, they do. And what do you make then, Chloe, of the changing numbers that find that, you know, fewer than a quarter have jobs this summer, and that number is going down, down, down? Does that surprise you?
Yeah, honestly, when I heard that, it was a big surprise to me because a majority of my friends not only work in the summer, but year round. And I think it's just kind of been normal my life, you know, seeing all the high schoolers work or having jobs. So it's honestly a surprise to hear that less and less teens are having jobs when my whole life I've been surrounded by people that are constantly working, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I take the point. Do you feel any pressure, Chloe, to not only work, but to have the quote-unquote right job or the job that looks good on a resume or something that transfers later? I mean, how much do you think about that kind of thing?
I mean, I do think about it. And personally, becoming a lifeguard was because I knew I wanted to become something like a camp counselor. And I knew that having a job such as a lifeguard would help me get into that sort of field. So, I mean, it really depends on what you're trying to do. But I definitely hear that a lot. And a lot of kids, or at least my friends, they're concerned about what jobs they're getting because, you know, I don't know if I'm explaining this the right way, but similar to me, they want to become a camp counselor or, you know, do something with children or something like that. And becoming a cashier, they fear, isn't as opportunistic as a lifeguard would be.
Well, Rainsford, how much do you hear from teens that you've talked to who talk about not only the pressure to find a job, but to find, quote unquote, the right job or the job with the right experience?
You know, honestly, it comes up time and time again in conversations, even discussions that aren't centered just on employment or just on jobs. I think that there's a lot of pressure on young people right now, especially to do all of the quote unquote right things. I think most young people want to create a good life for themselves. I think they have dreams they'd like to follow. I think more than anything, it seems like they'd like to be able to comfortably support themselves and have some sense of stability in the future. And that's very overwhelming to feel like not only am I having a hard time finding a job, but now it's got to be the quote unquote right one that goes on my resume to set me up for this other thing down the line. And something that comes up again in conversations, especially that I've had with teenagers, is that there's a lot of pressure to have your life figured out from the jump. As young as you can get everything situated, you need to have it all lined out, all planned. And then when things like COVID happens or declining employment happens, it really throws a kink in that entire system of success that we set them up with so early.
Yeah. Ari Feibusch, as a rising senior now, how much do you relate to that? How much pressure is there in society for kids, soon to be adults, to have things figured out pretty early?
There is a lot. I'm starting the process of figuring out what I want to do for college and applications and everything. And there is so much conflicting advice and information that you can follow and take with that. And that applies to jobs and extracurriculars and everything to just make yourself look good for the future. So I think when it comes to jobs, you know, if people feel like they're not going to get a good job, then they'd rather just focus on something that they can do elsewhere that's going to make them look good for the future. People really want to have something good set up for them because everything feels very shaky. You really need to have everything stacked in your favor.
Well, Rainsford, it sounds like exactly what you've been hearing on college campuses, on high school campuses, across the country. That sounds like what you're hearing.
Absolutely. And I think that if you kind of look at the data, it's even worse for young people of color, especially those in low-income households. They're less likely to hold a summer job than their white peers when they're probably the ones in the situation where they really need that money. And so when you couple the financial need, where young people need money to support themselves, with this kind of cultural, aspirational idea of how you're supposed to be successful and the timeline you're supposed to do it on, the young people I speak to describe it as a gutting amount of anxiety where they feel like they're one step away from messing up their entire future, even if the circumstances are beyond most of their control.
Z. Martin, working at Dunkin' this summer. Z, why don't you tell me about your work situation for the summer?
So far, it's been really great. It's been, I've also worked during the pandemic because, like, we're considered essential. And I actually started the job last year during the summer.
Okay. And is there an answer to why Dunkin'? Is it what was available? Is it something that you enjoy? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
At first, I did try to look at jobs that were more like career specified for what I wanted to do in the future, but there wasn't much of a job market for like jobs I could do as a teenager for that. So after I applied to like about 8 places and didn't get very great responses, I kind of just went with whatever option I had, which was Dunkin', and I ended up really liking it, actually.
I'm not surprised. I mean, but is there any stereotyping that you felt or anybody who says, you know, who looks down at all on what they would call a fast food job or a job like that?
For me personally, I haven't gotten that response, but I know that there is that response to a lot of my coworkers because most of my coworkers are a lot older than me, and this is somewhat of their permanent job, and it's really hard to see how much, like, little respect they get sometimes.
Wow, that is a powerful statement, and actually I want to go ahead and read more from Rainsford's piece, because it lines up with Z's saying there. A lot of her coworkers at Duncan are not necessarily teenagers working summer jobs, but adults who cannot retire, who need to work. And Rainsford's piece talked about this. Let me go ahead and read. Quote, today's young people are more likely to be primary caretakers or breadwinners in their families. And for others, it's a lack of jobs, not an inability to pull themselves off TikTok, that has contributed to the summer youth job decline. Meanwhile, many of those jobs associated with teens on summer break have been filled by a different demographic. When Thomas C. Showalter, executive director of National Youth Employment Coalition, visits the fast food restaurant in his Oklahoma hometown, where he worked as a teenager, he says it's more likely he'll see older workers. Many of them can't afford to retire, creating an environment in which older, more experienced workers are now competing with young people who need work experiences and, in a lot of cases, income to support themselves and their families. End quote. So Rainsford, not only is Z experiencing what you described in your piece, but Z is observing that these folks who are just working, trying to get by, support themselves, have the indignity of being disrespected for working at a place like Duncan, which probably only adds an insult to a lot of the pain they have suffered.
Absolutely, and it's completely disrespectful because, first of all, it just assumes that everybody is coming from the same background and same circumstances, and it also demoralizes that kind of labor and that kind of position when that's a cultural perception we've got. There's nothing inherently invaluable about working somewhere like Duncan, working at McDonald's. Every job matters because it is supporting someone on the other end who's working it, which is why all jobs deserve equitable wages and respect. And I think it says a lot about society right now that not only are we not actively creating opportunities for young people to really pull them into fields they might be interested in or give them the opportunity to tackle interesting work experiences that might feel relevant to their interests or what they might like to study in school or do later in life, we've also created a society where we're pushing people out of retirement. Not only can young people not find jobs, older workers can't afford to leave them. And I think that that looks like a lot of different things. For some, you know, maybe they've worked one job their entire life and find that they can't afford to retire, so they're going back to work, or they're taking a second job because they're trying to help support their children or their much older parents. And it just creates a trickle-down effect where not only are wages not equitable enough for a lot of people, in a lot of cases there aren't enough jobs either.
Well, and so let me ask our guest before I take some more of your phone calls. Steve, Bonnie, we'll take you in just a second. But I will ask the other panelists, all teenagers, if they can, you know, weigh in on whether they feel stereotyped. So, Z, I'm glad to hear that working at Duncan hasn't, you know, given you any grief for you individually. But do you think your generation is viewed as less willing to work hard or less willing to work or not having the same kind of work ethic? Have you felt any stereotyping generationally?
Yeah, I definitely feel that sometimes. And a lot of times, I guess people don't really, think about how with, sleep schedule and things like that, and how, when I was working during the school year, I would get up at about, 6 a.m. every single day. And a lot of people would, when I went back to school, a lot of people would just think I was, really tired and lazy, but they didn't really know that on the weekends I was working, 16 hours and getting up the same time I would get at school.
Well, Ari Feibusch, are you experiencing the same? What do you think about generational stereotypes?
I don't see exactly what Z sees with that because I don't have the exact same experience. I see more of the laziness as a millennial stereotype, and I think that we're starting to be seen as kind of the depressed weirdo generation. And I guess that kind of applies to our work ethic, that if we're not going to be able to get up and be able to work on ourselves, that we're not going to be able to get up and just get to work on anything.
What does it take to change that perception, Ari? I mean, is that, do you think, and I can ask you because I know your dad, I know your family, and I know how smart your family is and how thoughtful you are on subjects like this. Do you think that that's just sort of a generational thing that's normal, that everybody says kids these days, and that you'll end up being a 45-year-old who says kids these days? Or do you think there's something different there, Ari?
I mean, it's really hard to keep your mind open to younger generations and newer concepts when you're older. It's just, I think, a biological thing that happens when you age, and you really have to try and work at it.
That's so
and
true.
I hope
so
that
true.
When we're, you know, that kind of generation in the future, we can be open-minded towards our teenagers and not judge them.
Yeah, that is so smart, because I don't even say that patronizingly. I mean, honestly, it does require intentional effort not to become sort of jaded about younger generations. And I do think it requires kind of pushing yourself not to just fall into that. Chloe Malloy, how do you feel about that?
Honestly, I agree. And something I was just thinking about as I heard people talking is I hear so many adults say to, you know, my graduating class or people of my age, you know, I wouldn't know what I would do if I was like in your place in high school with all this new technology and, you know, the internet and whatnot. Because on one side, you know, we have the whole world at our fingertips, but on the other, it can be hard. Everything we're doing is increasing with technology, and I hear so many adults saying, you know, in about 10 years there's going to be jobs we never even heard of. So, you know, even though I'm growing up with technology and I'm one of the first generations to have, you know, phones and computers since the time I was born, it's still growing with me, and there's constantly new and growing technology. So I mean, it can be a little bit stressful at times trying to balance, you know, figuring it out as well as trying to go with the flow, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And seeing how disruptive it can be when technology leads to more automation and jobs that used to be there as options, summer jobs or otherwise, maybe not. That's Chloe Malloy, a lifeguard for the city of Rochester and a rising junior at World of Inquiry School number 58. Ari Feibusch and Zee Martin are rising seniors at Brighton, sharing their experiences. And Rainsford Stauffer's piece is what got us talking. She's a freelance writer and author of the forthcoming book, An Ordinary Age, and Rainsford's piece in Vox on the summer jobs ending as we know it has a lot of insight into why things are changing and what it means. Let's get our only break and then phone calls next. So Steve, Bonnie, we'll take you and we'll take some emails as well on the other side of our only break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, what is going on with the post office? We're going to talk about the state of affairs for the United States Postal Service, its past and its future, if it has one. In our second hour, some of the most moving art that you will see around our region is done by Black artists. We're going to tell their stories and understand this current moment from the eyes of the artists on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Steve in Brighton next on the phone. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. How you doing?
Good, sir.
your person talking about Nazareth caught my attention, so I thought I'd call in. I'm an old guy, but I put myself through college working as a painter. And I also had, I guess, what you'd call a poor folks scholarship. In 1971 through 77, when I was in school, tuition was never more than $500 a year at Memphis State University, which is now the University of Memphis. So I was able to do that. And as we all know, it's completely impossible to do that now. I would arrange my classes from 8 till noon and then go to work and work on the weekends. And one day I went to class and a young student said to me, why do you come to school looking like you do? And it pissed me off then, and it makes me angry to tell the story now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would often go to work in my work clothes. Mm-hmm. I mean, go to school in my work clothes. Both of my children have worked through college, and my son has been working at Tom Walls and has consistently wanted a job that was more attuned to what he intends to do in life and in business. But, you know, something odd has happened to him, and he knows it. He's suddenly in charge of 8, 7, 8, 11 people sometimes, and so he's developing managerial skills that he never thought he would get. Okay, But there's one thing I want to end with. The important thing that my son has learned is that although he's there making $15 an hour, and two of that's what they're calling hazardous duty pay right now, and he's a student, and he could quit, and I'd keep on sending him to school, more than half the people that he works with have two jobs, and they are paying for their family's needs out of that flipping hamburgers job. And I think he's learned a whole lot of important things. So the job doesn't always have to be completely angry at what you're going to do. There are a whole lot of skills and a whole lot of important things that you can learn. Okay?
Yeah, can I ask you a quick question? Can I ask you a quick question, Steve?
Yes.
Because I always love when you call, and it's not just because if I could pour your voice into a bottle and put it on, I could put it on pancakes. But honestly, Steve, I mean, I this kind of a story is really important, I think, because, you know, you heard Z Marvin tell us that working at Dunkin', you know, it's been great. It's been very good for her. You know, your son maybe didn't expect to be at Tom Walls and quote unquote want to be there or whatever, but there's been a real value that comes from it. And yet how often do we hear in society people of means talk about those jobs as quote unquote not real jobs, or maybe even painting houses, that kind of a thing?
Evan? My own father and mother would say to me, this was after I graduated from college. I was making a good living. I had people work for me. They say, when are you going to get a real job? Mm-hmm. And that annoys me. I mean, it doesn't anger me, but it annoys me when I think back about it.
Well, and the skilled trades is the same. I mean, there are skilled trades.
The trades are begging for people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. As we've talked about on this program. So,
yes.
Always good to have you. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the phone
call. Thank you, Evan. All right. Bye-bye.
I appreciate that. And, you know, Rainsford, you can still hear how it stung him to be viewed the way he did when he would show up for classes in paint clothes or anything like that, like as if that's not honorable work. And that, to me, that harkens to the call you had earlier this hour, that all jobs are honorable. You want to elaborate on that, Rainsford?
Completely. You know, as he was talking, it made me think of a post that had gone viral on Twitter earlier this week that I actually think has since been removed, but it was of a young worker at a Wendy's who appeared to be doing online school while waiting to take orders. And that was completely roasted on the internet as someone who wasn't that committed to their job or that committed to their education. And what I saw was a young person doing the best they could with the circumstances they were in and fulfilling both of those obligations. I think the idea that there's only a certain kind of job that's worth it, or if you show up to school looking dirty or looking like you've been to work at all, I think it speaks to a level of classism that is still really pervasive in our country. And you see that everywhere. You see it in employment. You see it in colleges. As you all mentioned, trades need young people. They need all kinds of people to enter them. But that would also us require bringing community colleges and vocational schools into how we talk about higher education and what higher education really means, which ties right into this idea that, well, the only kind of job worth having is one that's directly related to my major, that I got at a four-year school, and one that seems worth it. And while different circumstances and different positions and fields are definitely going to vary by person, there is no one-size-fits-all to this. And I think we really need a push for not only equity in how we pay people, but also this idea that certain kinds of labor are inherently more valuable than others.
Well, and on the subject of the way we stereotype, whether it's jobs or entire generations, Davin emails the program to say, love your show, Evan, but you asked a loaded question. Do people stereotype your generation regarding hard work? Has there ever been a generation that said, wow, kids these days are so hardworking and conscientious? So, Davin, I take the point. I didn't expect Chloe or Ari or Z to say that they think every adult in their sphere has a really sort of nuanced view of kids or even young adults. I take that point. But the reason I raise that is because I think we have to push ourselves to not just fall into these kind of tired old traps where we think kids these days are lazier. When I was growing up, this was always better, or if this was a, you know, this was more valuable. Things have changed a lot, and they're changing fast to the point that Chloe Malloy was making earlier. And they're changing fast in ways that can be really, really disruptive. And Rainsford Stauffer has talked to students across the country who feel anxiety in different ways. So let me ask the students on the panel again, when it comes to anxiety or when it comes to maybe the challenge of how you see your own future, the questions you have about work, the questions you have about whether you can find the career you want or build the life that you want. Z, I'll start with you. What do you think adults, to the extent that we can generalize, that they, if they think, well, life is easier for kids, I had it harder, you know, kids don't want to work, kids are lazy. What do you think they miss about the anxiety that your generation feels about your future and work?
I think there are so many, kind of like what Chloe was saying, there are so many new jobs that are coming about from all the different new avenues and new industries. And I think it makes it so that there are just so many options, and that can just instantly be very overwhelming. Whereas in the past, especially much older generations, you would kind of just pick up what your parents did.
I think that makes sense. Ari, you agree? How do you see it?
I've seen, like, the adults that are directly around me are sympathetic to what's going on because they're just like, wow, stuff is really messed up. Too bad that you're going to have to deal with that and I'll be dead.
I don't mean to laugh. Like, that's kind of a gallows humor laugh, but I mean, I hear you.
Yeah. But I think that in a general sense, from what I've seen is like generalizations online and just in media, I guess, people are a little less sympathetic and are just a little less conscious of what's happening for us, because you are a lot more aware of everything that's happening, especially with the rise of social media. Like, you're trying to be conscious of everything that's going on, but you're just one person, and the world has every issue that's going on all at the same time, and you just have, like, one human brain.
Well, but I do think, Ari, if you have adults in your life saying, boy, things are messed up, sorry, you're going to have to deal with this, at least that shows an awareness that your generation really is inheriting a lot of challenge. I mean, your generation is inheriting a situation where it's not necessarily going to be easy to have a better standard of living than your parents. And that was always the ostensible American dream that wasn't always accessible to everybody. We know that. But at least maybe there is some awareness, you think, generationally, that your generation really is inheriting something extremely challenging, Ari?
Yeah. At least within our generation, people are kind of fatalistic about, like, if we're around in 20 years, then I guess we'll do this.
You're going to be around, I promise you that. It's just I understand that things feel like they're moving in a dark direction.
Yeah,
you're going to be here, and your generation is actually going to do amazing things. Sometimes I sound patronizing, but I really believe this. Chloe, how do you see this?
So I definitely agree with the other two panelists. I mean, like it was mentioned, there are so many new opportunities and things to be aware of, and it can be kind of hard navigating exactly what you want to do, especially with this idea. At least I personally feel it's like, a lot of people expect you to go down one field, one career path, and you study that one thing in school, and that's just what you do with your life. But now what I'm finding more and more and seeing other people experience as well is there's so many things we want to do, and we don't want to be limited to just one train of thought or just one career. There's so many things out there to explore. So I don't know if other people feel this way, but it's hard to navigate all these new opportunities and trying to see what you want to do when there's so much out there, if that makes sense.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let me get back to your phone calls. And Dee in Rochester next, been waiting. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, yes. Well, I totally understand that it's hard for the kids to find the job these days. But what I do want to say is that when I go into Dunkin's or McDonald's and I see younger people and older people working there, I am just like, man, they're lucky because they really do start off with more money than I make in the field that I've been in for 30 years. I work with people with developmental disabilities, and they make more money than me, and I'm happy. I'm not even jealous because I could obviously go apply. My job is a longer career, I guess you'd say, but I'm happy for them that they're making this money, that the older people are making this money. They deserve it. Everyone deserves a fair wage. And Yeah, that's all I wanted to say is that, you know, it's not embarrassing to start off at those jobs. I started off at McDonald's in the early 80s. I loved it. I actually ended up quitting school because I needed to make more money, and then I did go back to school and graduated. But I understand the need to make money, and there are so many careers out there. Now, my job, I could move up, I could move down. I just am happy with working with people. I work with adults with Down syndrome, and they make me laugh. So I kind of like weigh it, like, oh, that doesn't, I don't get a lot of money, but it makes me happy. But, yeah, I always see these older people working at these fast foods, and I'm just happy they're working, and they're making a fair wage working there. I mean, everyone deserves more. But I have no problem seeing the adults working there or the young people. I think it's great they're mixing and probably getting to know each other a little bit better to become better people.
Sure. Dee, thank you for the phone call. I will first say the work that you describe yourself doing is so important. And I think just idealistically, probably everybody listening would like you to make more money because the work you do is so beautiful. It's so important. I don't know if everybody, Rainsford stuff, or I'm not sure if everybody in fast food is making the living wage that Dee is describing, but I don't know offhand. What do you think?
I can just speak with anecdotal experience and data I know of from states where I'm from or have friends. And I think, unfortunately, that's probably not the case. I wish it was. I hope we reach the point where everybody is making not just a living wage, but a wage that is comparable to where they are and the cost of living and the work that they're doing. But to go back to an earlier point about generational stereotyping, I think what's so interesting in that is, first of all, in my opinion, the circumstances have dramatically changed for today's young people, and I do think the data bears that out. But second of all, I think that sometimes when these conversations happen where it's, well, my generation had it worse. No, my generation is worse off. I think what we miss is that when systems are inequitable, when society is broken, and when there are systemic issues, it's impacting all of us. I think right now young people are bearing the brunt of that because, as they've described on this call, they're staring down a future that seems uncertain at best. But really, when our systems are broken, it's impacting everybody.
That's, I think, well said. And part of the reason we wanted to have this conversation was because Rainsford's piece on summer jobs, the lack of summer jobs, especially for teenagers, and maybe yes, in the traditional categories we think about, summer camps, things like that, but also just jobs and work in general. You could look at it as data, but I think Rainsford's piece connects a lot of dots about the impact here of what it means for the future and what it means for teenagers trying to support their families and trying to launch careers or set themselves up to do better in life. A lot is changing, and not always for the better. But let me get Katie in Penfield with a different take. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I own a restaurant in Rochester, and I've owned it since beginning of the 1980s. And the girls that are on the radio today are definitely different from what I have found hiring people. When I started hiring people in the 80s, it was definitely a different work ethic, and I hate to say that, but it's kind of true.
So you think kids these days don't have the work ethic that previous generations did? Is that right?
Pardon me?
Katie, you think kids these days don't have the work ethic that previous generations do?
I think that, yes, I do, and I'm sorry to say that. Not everyone, but a lot of people do not. I have been hiring people, and, you know, when I first started hiring people, if someone got fired, it was, you know, horrible, and I give people tons of chances. Now if I fire a kid, even first year college, their parents come in and yell at me, why did you fire my kid?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely different. You know, one of my rules is you can't have your phone on you, and some kids just won't follow that rule.
Okay.
You know, there's no reason you have to have a phone on you when you're waitressing. You know, it just, you don't have to. And I just think, I started at this restaurant when I was 16, and I took a lot of pride, and all my friends that worked there did too. And I just don't see that anymore. I really don't. I wish I did, but I just don't see it in most of the kids anymore. Sometimes I do, but a lot of the times it's just, you know, if they get fired, they get fired.
What do you think that comes from, Katie?
I think sometimes, like I said, when I fire someone that's a freshman in college and their parents are coming in to yell at me about it, I think a lot of it sometimes is, you know, parents, you know, if they're thinking now their parents or their kids never do anything wrong. Whereas back when I was a child, if I had gotten fired from this job, my parents would have been so disappointed and upset with me. I wish I could put my finger on it. I pay really well. I work around college. I work around high school schedules. And a lot of the time, because I do that, they take advantage.
Okay.
Like I said, I try to hire every year, and I end up losing probably half of them. The biggest thing is they want to be on their phone.
Well, I mean, I will say, Katie, having one of my first jobs, I worked in a restaurant. Cell phones did not exist then, and
yeah.
Dating myself a little bit here, and I would say that there were plenty of people I worked with who, you know, they probably could take or leave the job, didn't work.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be a mix, isn't there, Katie, of people who are hard workers?
Yes, but more now so than before. Before it was maybe 10%, and now, you know, in my thing, it's 60 or 70. I mean, the waitresses at my restaurant that really want to do their job make boatloads of money. Some of them just don't want to.
Okay.
You know, and I will fire people if they are not nice to the customers, and that's one of the biggest things that I'm having a problem nowadays. They don't have respect for the customers.
All right. Katie,
and, you know,
let me let our panel jump in here. Rainsford, what do you make of that phone call?
Sure. I think that, as with everything, there's going to be examples across the range of this. It's certainly not that every single young person in this country wants a job and is a hard worker, just like, frankly, not every older adult is really a hard worker and is particularly committed to their work. I haven't seen any numbers that lay out that this generation is lazier or less inclined to work than others, so can't really speak to that. But I was thinking during that call back on a separate conversation I had with a workforce expert who was talking about how when they were younger, they could kind of learn how to behave at a job, how to apply for a job, how to get a job from their parents or their grandparents. They kind of had a model to follow. And I do wonder, and again, I don't have data in front of me to back this up, but it does make me wonder if some of this has to do with the newness that young people are navigating, because the workforce has changed so much. And as you said, you know, you didn't have a cell phone to be a distraction at your job. In some ways, this generation and the one right above them are kind of the first to navigate, what does it mean to be a teenager who's connected to social media while at work? How do I figure out all of these different parts of my identity and how they work together? I think the only time this gets slippery, which I don't think is what happened on that call, to be clear, I think the only time this gets slippery is when we lump people in together, where every young person is lazy, just like that's like saying every older person is bitter about the generation younger than them. And thankfully, that's not true. I think hopefully by having these conversations about different inequities, different circumstances, we can come to a place where there's opportunity for everyone and everyone feels fulfilled by the situation they're in.
Talking to Rainsford Stauffer, a freelance writer who whose piece is her journalism in Teen Vogue, in Vox, have gotten our attention. And we'll also direct you to Rainsford's piece in Teen Vogue called "The College Experience Myth is Unrealistic and Puts Pressure on Students." And briefly here, as rising seniors, Ari Feibusch, do you feel pressure that your college experience has to check all these boxes that it's supposed to be instead of, you know, being the experience that maybe you need it to be for your life? Is there pressure on students your age to have a certain college experience, pandemic or not?
Definitely. I feel that I need to get something out of college to get a return on that investment, because it's such a big investment compared to, you know, that caller earlier who said that it was $2,000 a year for her. It's so much bigger now, and you need a bigger return on a bigger investment. But it's not
a bigger return now. So you need to make sure that you have it planned out so that you can get what you want out of it in the future. And if you don't have a plan, then not everybody can afford to just spend time kind of wandering around college and using that to find out what they want to do.
Yeah, high stakes for sure. About 30 seconds, Z, how do you see it?
I definitely think that the prestige needed for a lot of, like, professional jobs and, like, there's a lot of pressure to get a well-paying job, especially because a lot of wages aren't sustainable for where people live and things like that. And usually prestige from a college can also contribute so much to the cost of the college. So it's almost like buying, like, name brand clothing and things like that. It sometimes feels like the college experience is becoming a lot like that. And it's sometimes very hard to, like, judge what the best route is.
Yeah, yeah. Chloe, 30 seconds for you. As a rising junior, how much are you thinking about the pressure of having the quote-unquote right college experience?
It's definitely up there, and I'm definitely thinking about it. And what saddens me is, you know, now I hear a lot of people saying, well, what's the point of going to college when it's so expensive? And I just know personally for me and some of my close friends, at the end of the day, we just want to make a difference. So whether or not we get that true college experience, we just want to go so then we can make the difference we hope to see at the end of the day.
Awesome. Rainsford, 30 seconds to close for you. Are you an optimist after talking to so many students, college and high school across the country? Or are you concerned for their futures?
I'm always going to be concerned because I think this country, as we're seeing as we speak, has some major systemic inequities and problems that we're going to have to grapple with and we're going to have to fix them. But of course, I'm optimistic in today's young people. I think that they're a big force for change, and it's happening in real time.
Rainsford Stauffer is a journalist whose piece in Vox was about summer work, summer jobs that sparked this. Also an outstanding piece for Teen Vogue on the college experience myth. We'll post those on our platforms. And Rainsford, we appreciate your generosity with your time. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And to Chloe Malloy, Ari Feibusch, Z. Marvin, thank you for all of your time and good luck in your futures. Thanks for sharing this hour with us. They're all so nice. They're waiting for somebody else to say thank you. Thanks, Chloe,
RNZ.
Their futures are going to be awesome. We believe in them very much so. Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk with you Friday on member-supported public radio.